Want to blog with the official IBM blogging template? Need to take your favorite collaboration client on the road with you? Or find out where all the cool kids are hanging out at Lotusphere 2007? Do you need to feed the world with data from your Notes and Domino apps? Does Chris Miller finally make peace with iTunes and FeedBurner? Find out what new OpenNTF releases have rolled out of the OpenNTF kitchen. It's Tuesday, October 4th, 2006, and I am Bruce Elgort here with
Julian Robichaud
for episode 34 of the Taking Notes podcast. I did that all in one breath.
That was amazing. I'm stunned.
How the heck are you, Julian?
I'm doing fantastic, Bruce. How's everything going up there?
Everything is going great, kind of diagonally up here, you know, since we're diagonally across from each other. And that's going to change, like, real soon, right?
Well, the diagonalathalony. Diagonalness. We'll still be diagonal. I'll just be moving about 6 hours north of here. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, tomorrow is the day that we're loading up the truck. And then on Thursday, we're closing on this house. And on Friday, we're closing on the house up in Atlanta. So, yeah, moving to Atlanta this week.
Wow. So you're joining, who lives up there? Rocky Oliver? Chris Byrne?
I made a whole list, as a matter of fact. And I'm going to blog this. I'm so behind in everything right now because, well, I'm moving. But let's see. Brian Green from Automated Logic is up there. Rocky Oliver, Nathan Freeman's there now.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. Chris, you sure you want to move?
Chris Byrne, who's actually in Athens, but that's close enough. Mike Schubert, who does the Running Log blog. He's up there. Is Chris Blatnick up there?
Yeah, I think Chris is in that area as well.
Yeah, I think he might be. Tom Nichols. Do you remember Tom's rant?
Yeah, I remember Tom's
rant.
And
we hung out with Tom a couple of years ago at Lotusphere. He lives up there. I know where he works, and I'm going to try to get him to start blogging again when we go up there. A couple guys, Michael Brown and Jamie Price, who live just outside of Atlanta, and they both have blogs.
That is a highly dense Notes and Domino area of expertise.
Dense. And you mean dense in a good way, right?
Of course I do. Hey, Julian. Last Friday, Notes and Domino 702 hit the streets.
Yes, it did. And you know, you've been all over that. You've been on that like white on rice, Bruce.
Hey, you know, I've just try to get the word out, you know, just like the podcast. But now,
well, but you've been playing with it, though. I mean, you didn't just download it. You've been going through all the little bits and pieces and
yeah, I've played with Nomad. I've played with the RSS feed generator. I've played with the blogging template. And speaking of the blogging template, we have a short interview with Mr. Steve Castledine, the author of that new IBM blog template. And what else? There's one more thing in. Did I miss something in 702? Nomad.
Oh, there's all sorts of stuff. There's did you do the RSS feeds?
Yeah, I said that.
Talk about that. iCal
support, stuff, right?
Right. TNEF. They're going to finally support windmail.dat files. They're going to kind of fix that to where they can translate it. They've got the run as admin stuff for the smart upgrade, which I'm not an administrator type, but apparently that's pretty important for the administrator guys. Mm-hmm. And you know, well, where should we start? What's the best thing to start talking about?
Actually, we haven't podcasted in a while, and you know, thanks for all the emails from people. And there was one person who nagged us to get a podcast out. I didn't share it with you, Julian. A Jacqueline Coleman somewhere in the UK. I have no idea where she is. She was just, where the heck is episode 34 of the podcast? So, well, I didn't say that right. Where's bloody? No, no. Sorry for the poor.
However you say that is going to be wrong, Bruce.
Exactly. So let's start with the feed generator.
All right. Feed generator. RSS feeds. I think we shall.
Right. So up until 702, most Domino, you know, Domino developers who needed to support RSS feeds in their database kind of rolled their own, right? They created a view. They, you know, set certain attributes, certain, you know, things, you know, in the to conform to the RSS feed. They may have, you know, put it on a page, put some embedded HTML, you know, XML in there, and they created an RSS feed on a per database or per view or whatever basis. So I don't know if I phrased that correctly. I've had too much caffeine tonight, Julian. But what the RSS feed generator does is it essentially is a single database that you have on your server that is geared towards a Domino developer. And what happens is you create a new feed in the database. In that feed, you get to choose, you know, a database that you want to generate an RSS feed for. You select the view which contains the data for the RSS feed. Then you get to add a couple things into the RSS feed on the document, this feed generator, this new RSS feed document. You get to put in a title, a description, you know, what language, what encoding you're going to use, you know, things that you would normally, you know, code into your own RSS feed. Now that you have the basics down for the RSS feed, you can include optional items that describe the RSS feed in more detail. How many RSS entries do you want to show? Do you want it to convert notes names to RFC 822 names, you know, for like email addresses? Do you want to add additional tag libraries? Do you want to treat the view as an ordered list? You know, things like that. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. Bruce. Don't let me interrupt you.
Thanks, Julie. I was on a roll.
Sorry.
And then from there, you know, you get to choose other attributes that you typically include in your RSS feed, like title, author, the publish date, and a link to the actual notes document that you want to, you know, that you're including in your RSS feed. And a couple interesting things about those attributes, you know, title, author, pub, date, and link. You can either select a column from your view or use a predefined keyword that they have, you know, in the dropdown for you. And then you also have to define for those particular items what type of data type they are. Are they text? Are they a date? You know, etc. So once you do that, you simply save your form, and then what happens is you go to this database, this RSS feed generator database that you have on your server, and you load it up, and essentially what it does is list all the feeds that you're publishing from your Domino server. And essentially what you could do at that point is simply click on it and, you know, click on one of the links, and it lists them by title. And you can also order them in the database. And then there you go. You have your RSS feed generated for you. So, you know, it's cookie cutter. It's easy to do. It actually also obeys access control lists, including author and reader fields. So there you go.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the most interesting parts, is that most people think of RSS as something that you know, you're publishing this public information, like a newspaper or a blog or something like that, and it's neat when you start thinking about databases. And let's say that you want to turn your inbox for your mail file into an RSS feed, mm-hmm. So that way you have a feed reader, like on a mobile device or even on your desktop, that just checks your inbox every once in a while just to see if you have new messages. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you publish that feed, you don't want everyone else in the world to be able to see it. Mm-hmm. And so it's neat that it can actually automatically handle that kind of authentication for you. And I guess the only thing you'd have to do is make sure that whatever feed reader you have has the ability to pass name and password, or some kind of token, probably name and password, mm-hmm. Along with the call for the feed. But, you know, that's when you start talking about sort of enterprise and internal data like that, then yeah, that starts becoming pretty important. So mm-hmm. Now this is something that I think you or someone else described as probably not something that end users would set up RSS feeds for, but probably an administrator or developer would be the ones who are just kind of getting these things set up in the database in the first place. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. This gives the Domino server product, you know, the ability to say that they can, you know, generate RSS feeds, you know, right out of the box.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and now the trick is okay, the capability's there. Now we have to explain to the end users what RSS feeds are, right?
Yes. But guess, you know, I was in the Detroit, I spoke at the Detroit Notes user group about a week ago, and I was amazed that the number of people who knew what RSS was, you know, at least Notes and Domino developers, was about 95% now, compared to about 5% back in April when I spoke at some of the other user groups. So people are slowly, you know, catching on, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think more so as you can do useful things with it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people in terms of corporate users who wouldn't necessarily think of a blog as useful, mm-hmm. or they wouldn't think of even a news feed from a newspaper as useful because, well, heck, I'll just go to CNN.com or something. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden you could have maybe alerts from a database or, again, your inbox or, you know, maybe even a calendar that's showing you the things that are coming up from today. You can start consolidating those into an aggregator. And I think that can be. I think we're going to see some interesting uses of RSS feeds that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, standards. You know, and consortiums such as like the I don't know what the exact consortium name is, but the iCalendar consortium, mm-hmm. that's trying to, you know, standardize the way that, you know, we can work with, you know, iCalendar type feeds between different systems, to, you know, disparate systems. That stuff's kind of cool. But you mentioned before, you know, the calendar stuff. You know, if a company now can put out, say, their event schedule via an RSS feed on their website using this template, and it can be consumed into something that understands iCalendar, like Google Calendar or, you know, Yahoo Calendar or Apple's iCal, you know, et cetera. So it opens new avenues up for developers and so forth. So you're spot on, buddy.
Yeah, and it's native.
It's
so
native.
Now it's just there as long as you have 7.02.
Yeah, I mentioned the keywords before, and some of those keywords were, you know, author, last modified date, first attachment URL, iCalendar URL, and vCard URL. So I also forgot to mention, Julian, that there's two additional items you can add to your feed, and that are, those include like a description and any enclosures or category or comments, that type of stuff. So you can actually, you know, publish a podcast with an enclosure, you know, a podcast feed with an enclosure in it that points to this podcast. So
hey, there you go. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, and now, of course, that's something we're doing already with Steve Castledine's blog template, right?
Right. What used to be Steve Castledine's blog template?
Well, it used to be. Well, I mean, technically it still is at this point. Have we upgraded yet?
No. And that's a question we'll cover during the interview with Steve, you know, about people who have the Domino blog template and how that's going to how moving forward with the IBM blog template is, you know, may impact them or may not impact them, but you have to.
True.
Listeners have to wait. So actually,
yes, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves.
Well, let's get ahead of ourselves and let's talk to Steve. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it.
Hello, Steve Castledine. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Yourself?
Good. Great. Well, Bruce, are you there too?
Got my cup of coffee. It's, 5:30 a.m. on Wednesday, October 4th. And just by the way, I did get the date wrong on the recording last night. I said Tuesday, October 4th. So I apologize to the listening audience. Steve, cheers.
Hi.
Well, I think we can look past that, Bruce.
I felt so bad. I mean,
well,
Steve Castledine we're talking to here.
I know.
I expect perfection, like his template, you know?
Right.
Your podcast's been great so far, so I'm sure one little error with the date won't be noticed.
Steve, the check's in the mail.
Well, let's talk about the blog template. Now, Steve, the blog template is something that you started developing, gosh, you know, 15, 20 years ago, right?
And it feels that way.
and now it's actually a Blue application. What went on with going from Steve's blog template to IBM's blog template?
Well, I mean, first off, you know, the template was developed 4 years ago, and I never imagined it to be used by anyone but myself, or let alone to be developed in a commercial application. So there's a lot of things in there which had to be removed. There was Stuff like open source code I use in there for the rich text editor on the web browser. That was using the Tiny MCE code. Because of the license restrictions on that, the open source license restrictions, we couldn't use it in a commercial product. So that had to be stripped out. There's various other bits and pieces I had to take out as well. Then, again, because I only intended on using the software myself originally, I had to change the UI, so it looked more like a standard notes template that, IBM released for their software. There's some other things I had to take out. You know, there was code in there which was half done, features in there which were sort of half completed. And that's okay when you're running a sort of a community project which is updated. You know, every week people are downloading every week. I'm there to support that. But when you're releasing it as a in the core code, which you know doesn't get changed every week, you can't have half-baked ideas in there and half-baked code in there because support-wise, it'd just be an absolute nightmare. So I had to do a lot of tidying up for just to think of the support people and how we would support it going forwards. And that they're the main three main areas. There were a few other bits that had to change so the language people could release it in different languages a lot easier. Again, when I first wrote a template. You know, I had English spelling words that we spell them in England, so I had to change, you know, a lot of those words to, you know, S's disease and things like that. I had to change things so the language people could replace keywords with, you know, French, German, all the other languages, so it'd still work. So a lot of things which normally you wouldn't design a template if you designing it as commercial software, but I didn't think of those things because it never was going to be in that arena.
Wow.
So they're the areas. It was quite a lot of work, to be honest. Not just myself, but you know, other people at IBM. You know, they must hate me, some of these people, because I gave them an awful lot of work to do and a lot of things to think about.
Who's this Steve guy that's giving us all this work?
Yeah. Where did he come from?
I get they hate you. You gave him a great blog template, so.
Well, and there's already a couple of blogs running on the production template, right? I think Jeff Eisen is running it.
Yeah, he started using a beta version, and unfortunately for me, it's worked and it hasn't broken as far as I know.
Well, and now I guess a question for someone like me and Bruce, because we've been running your blog template on for taking notes for,
yes.
I guess, as long as it's been around, since November or something. Now, you mentioned at some point that there's going to be an upgrade path, but there's not yet. How do you see that working?
Well, basically what happened when I sort of changed the template around, there's a few things in there I thought, that needs changing just so it can be easier to support and easier to explain to new customers using it. And so the big difference is some of the HTML templates you use inside the template, the structure has changed. So when you upgrade your old blog to the new blog template, most of the things, you know, that's fine, but you need to change those HTML templates to suit the new format, which is a simplified format. So what I plan on doing is writing some code just so it'll upgrade from one to the other in a click of a button, so it'll be no big deal to anyone.
That is awesome, Steve. I know that, you know, I asked that question out on the web, and you answered it, and I think that's great. That upgrade path, perfect, man.
It'll be one button, that was it. Something I wanted to do for a long time is simplify those templates, but I never had the opportunity. They were, again, a bit confusing.
Because you weren't getting a blue paycheck.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't have the support network that that IBM have to support.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking of them.
So just to dig into the template for the technical weenies that we have in the audience, Steve, does I guess it's called the IBM blog template now. Does it generate a lot of stuff on the fly, or is it? Do you store some type of HTML document in the blog template, or how does it without
it does both.
Too much detail?
It does both. It does both. There's a lot of things that you can obviously do automatically using views and agents, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of performance, you have to remember the poor old Domino server's got to generate all of that. So if there's any HTML that the system can know in advance, just things like category counts. So if you've got a category on your blog and you know you've got 50 entries in there, you don't need the server to go and work that out. every time someone clicks your homepage. Mm-hmm. So things like that are stored in advance. You know, they're worked out when the user saves their blog entry. And you get a big saving on that in terms of performance. So there's a lot of things like that which go in the background in the template. The user doesn't actually see this happening, but it happens.
Excellent.
Okay, now what about comment spam?
Yeah, that's a problem, isn't it? Quite a while ago, I started getting the sort of robot comment spam. So I added some code to actually detect if it's coming from a robot, and it blocks. I think it blocks 100% robot spam these days. But we have a new problem now where in some countries people are now being employed to post comment spam on blogs. I'm not sure
I got to
we'll
do something to earn my paycheck.
That's just insane. So there's not a lot you can do about that, right? I mean, if someone is going to, I guess, physically go to your blog and type in a spam message and validate everything, you can't unvalidate them. But and the robots have been the big problem, for a long time, just because there's so much volume.
Yeah, yeah. But they're blocked for the template. The robots do not get through. These people, to be honest, I get about 3 a week on my blogs, people manually posting comment spam. But what you find is if you delete them quite quickly, they get bored of trying. And so then you go months without them bothering. I think Swan is actually, they do check, see whether the spam does go on. And they will remove from their list if you see you delete them really, really quickly. And what I found as well, if you don't publish people's web addresses in their comments, they tend to avoid you by doing that as well. If you do not publish people's web addresses, they tend to, can't be bothered, that's not worth it. I've noticed that.
What about, HTML text? They could put links in there, but...
Yeah, they can put links in. I have a control on the template, which if people put too many links in, you can sort of set a throttle. So if someone puts more than 2 or 3 links in their posting, you can get it blocked straight away. The system will count how many links are in their comment postings. So that's one way of getting rid of some of the manual postings. If they go a bit overboard and they put 5 links to the same web page or different web pages, you can pick up on things like that. Because normally when people comment on a blog, they won't want to put that many links in a posting. Unfortunately, if they do try, they will be blocked for my blog right now. But that's one of the things that we have to face these days are these spammers.
Yeah. Well, it's all a trade-off.
Yeah.
You know. So, well, gosh, in terms of just getting the blog set up and things like that, right now the setup process is you have to have a 7.02 server to get the template in the first place, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, then you go ahead.
It does work, though, on version 6.0 onwards. So there's nothing in the template which is 7 specific. It will work on version 6.
Oh, really?
So there's nothing added. It's not 7.02 only either. It'll
but if you call support, they may...
I'm not too sure what happens with support. They probably say you have to be running 7 to support it. Mm-hmm. For probably contractual and license reasons as well, I'm sure you can only use it if your license is 7.02. That's one of the things. But technically, it will work on older server.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And then so you then create a new database based on the template. And is there just a single configuration page you go to set your blog up, or how do you get it set up?
When the database opens the first time, I've added a sort of wizard dialog box which comes up and just asks you basic information like the title you want to give to your website, a description, and your name and your email address. And when you click OK on that dialog, the code are then going to set up a configuration document. And add yourself to that, and it's just ready to go. You just start adding content, and the site works from there.
It's easy. I did it. I actually was testing it in the beta, during the beta period, and it that's just it. That dialog box comes up. You enter a couple, items in, and poof, you've got a web blog. So,
all right, and then you have CSS for everything, pretty much for the style, right?
Yeah. And the CSS is within a notes document as well, so none of that information is stored in the design of the template. So it makes it pretty easy for sort of admins and developers to change the look and feel of the resulting website to how they want it to look.
Wow.
If you had a say what one of the biggest challenges was, Steve? What is it, the rich text to MIME stuff, to HTML, or what was the biggest challenge?
Supporting it.
Supporting it.
It became a huge monster.
Well, I do have to say that you provided great support to Julian and myself, for the Taking Notes blog, and we thank you.
I tried my best. It actually did become quite difficult to support it as more and more people were using it, especially at the time, as a freelancer, I was working hard anyway on making sure I had enough money each month to pay my bills and my mortgage.
Well, sorry about that, guys. Looks like Skype gave out on us.
That darn Skype. IBM used to buy Skype and fix it.
Yeah, get Steve to fix it. So, Steve, just to wrap things up here, what's next for the IBM blog template for you?
Well, to be honest, having just got this version out, I've not really thought about sort of the next stage. The concentration has been to get this out, get rid of any bugs, get the support processes in, get the language translation in. And whilst I've been doing that, I've been working on other projects inside of IBM and doing other work. So we've yet really to decide or to even discuss the next stage with all this, but I'm sure it'll come.
Excellent. Julian, any last questions for Steve?
I have no last questions, just a big congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations, Steve, and thank you. Maybe we can get you on an episode where we dedicate it to the IBM blog template, tell people how to get started, go through some FAQs and stuff like that. And
That'd be great.
If you'd like to.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe we could do it a little bit quicker this time and not wait a year. So. All right, guys, it's 5:55 a.m. my time. I'm feeling like I did last night, Julian. I'm back on the caffeine.
It's coffee time.
It's coffee time.
All right.
Steve, thanks again, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
No problem. See you guys.
Bye.
Hey, great interview with Mr. Castledine there. We've been trying to get, a podcast together with Steve for a while, and I guess he's been kind of busy creating that IBM blog template. So,
well, that and like just house stuff too. Hasn't even had engineers at his house or some crazy thing like
that. Some crazy water is coming up out of his sink or something like that.
Yeah, as though that's a problem.
Yeah. So, so you want to take your notes client on the road with you? What do you do, Julian?
Right now.
Right now.
I bring my laptop.
Right, so you're going over to the in-laws' house, you lug the laptop over, you fire up notes, you check what you need to do, and then you put your laptop away, right?
Yeah.
Or you
act like that's something strange.
Or you continue to use the laptop to stay away from the in-laws.
Exactly. I can hold my... No, just one more email. I'll be right back.
So in 702, they have... Nomad, and what Nomad is, it's essentially it places your notes client and any databases that you want to include there, like in your roaming profile and stuff like that, and it puts it on a USB key. So now you can take just your USB key to your in-laws, plug it in your father-in-law's virus-infested PC, and run notes.
Perfect.
There you go.
Well, and actually, one of the neat things about the U3, U3 thumb drives or U3 USB devices, is if you get one of those, I think there's tools on there that not only, I guess, have kind of antivirus capabilities and things like that, but I think I saw one that was an anti-keylogger, where if you stick the thumb drive in a PC that has a keylogger on it, somehow it knows, which I have no idea how that would work.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple episodes ago, and I forgot. I did some research on that, but obviously I just don't remember. So I set up Nomad today, and I'll be honest with you. I did mention a little bit about the installation on my blog today. It was easy. You know, you type in this command setup, you know, with a couple switches and stuff like that, and I have a slow USB key. I had a 512 meg key, and it took about an hour to get everything set up, but it was lunchtime, so it worked out great.
Yeah. Well, that's an important thing for people to understand, is that the speed of USB keys and thumb drives varies tremendously.
Yeah.
And who was it that said today that in the release notes it said it could take anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour to install?
I think it was Chris Wissenot.
Yeah, I think
sorry if I botched the pronunciation, Chris, but we're famous for that on the Taking Notes podcast.
That's what we're good at.
And we'll link to Chris's excellent blog post about his Nomad experience in the show notes.
Yeah, and in fact, there's been several reviews and kind of various technical things on the internet where they actually compare speeds of USB keys and thumb drives and talk about the fast ones and the slow ones. And again, it's something that you probably don't notice when you're just copying a file or two from the thumb drive, but if you're going to be using it to actually run a client, especially something kind of big like a Notes client, then you really want to get a fast one if you can.
Well, I took the USB key, and I work in a Microsoft world during the day, and I took the USB key. I walked up to my buddy's PC. I plopped it in. It auto-launched Notes client. You know, it prompted me for my ID, typed in my user, you know, my password. Boom, my mail came right up, buddy.
There you go.
You know, they're like, okay. I'm like, all right, riddle me that, Mr. Exchange, you know?
Yeah, let's see you do that, buddy.
So good stuff with Nomad, very easy. The one suggestion I would have to IBM is just create a little executable to get that thing started so you don't have to type in that Unix-style command line to get it started, you know, to get the installation going.
Now, can you also install it on your local hard drive and then simply copy the files over? Is there some xcopy method for doing it?
I don't know. It does ask for, you know, a location of the drive, you know, what drive letter. So I don't know if that's built. I haven't looked at the Notes Any file, you know, on the tear the microphone out of the computer, Bruce. You know, on the USB key, I just don't know. I do know that I did put some screenshots up on my blog of what it looks like, you know, the Nomad installation. So if you want to take a look there, we'll link to it. It's got a couple VB, you know, DLLs and, you know, a couple of little things. But it works as advertised. Good job, IBM. You know, it works, you know.
Good.
So, so now, you know, you don't have to lug your laptop around. Go ahead, Mr. Robichaux.
Oh, and nothing. Let's just move on.
So, you know, everyone always asks where all the cool kids hang out at Lotusphere, you know, and
we get asked that all the time.
All the time, and you know, enough's enough. So, we're going to answer it online here on the air here, and that is at Pedestal 324 at the product showcase at Lotusphere 2007, and that's where the OpenNTF gang will be. To meet and greet and talk about everything OpenNTF with the listeners. So Pedestal 324, and I don't know if there'll be shirts this year, stickers, a combination thereof. But if
USB
you want,
sticks.
USB sticks, yeah. Actually, they're pretty cheap now, right?
Yeah, for the cheap ones.
Yeah, for the cheap
ones. You wouldn't
one.
Give people cheap USB sticks, though.
I know people do, though.
They know? Do. They do, and no one's ever happy with them.
So we talked about feeding the world with the RSS generator.
RSS.
We talked about the blogging template with Mr. Castledine. We talked about Nomad. Just one little fun thing here. Chris Miller, who we've spoken to before on you know, on the Collaboration University stuff. In addition to his sysadmin podcast, well, Chris has finally got his podcast feed up on iTunes. So I spent tons of instant messages, instant messaging Chris, and he finally got it. So If you head on over to Chris's blog, idonotes.com, on the left-hand side, he's got a little, you know, subscribe with iTunes link, and you could click and subscribe to it there. He's got two new podcasts out from Collaboration University. One is with Carl Tyler. They were sitting in a hotel room in London, and they did a fantastic job. They talked about CollabU, and then they did another one where they talked about same time 7.5 policy. So check it out.
Those admin guys.
Yeah, you know, they have it easy.
They do. I know. If it wasn't for developers like me, their world would probably be a lot better.
You mentioned admins. According to Thomas Gums, there are no new Domino administrator features in 7.02. I guess there's probably just some bug fixes. I really haven't looked at the list of bugs fixed in 7.02, but what else, Mr. Robich? We have John Rowling's OpenNTF update, so let's take a listen.
Hey there, it's Greyhawk here with another OpenNTF update. Chad Sheffault's Open Audit is the October application of the month. Open Audit is a complete and easy way to track changes to fields and documents. Domino RSS by Peter Narland is a new project and is currently at release 0.10. Domino RSS is an RSS feed generator that goes way beyond the features in the Domino 7.02 release. Application Activity Tracking, version 1.01, managed by Chris Blotnick, is also a new project. This application provides a simple yet powerful per-document usage auditing that can be dropped into any existing database. Database Alert, managed by Thomas Adrian, is also a new project that alerts you when certain events occur in any database. And Remote Embedded View Manager, or REVM, managed by Andy Broyles, is a new project that provides the ability to update Remote Embedded View Database replica IDs. Now that's something I know Bruce had looked for years ago. Lookup Audit, managed by Mark Demacoli, is a new project, and it's in its first alpha release. And that just goes to show you, there are a lot of new projects out on OpenNTF, so if you haven't been out there in a while, please stop by and check it out or contribute yourself. Couple of oldies but goodies, Vacation Request, managed by Gary Cousins and Bob Brodsky, is now at the released version 2.2.4. Come on, guys, take a vacation and stop releasing updates already. The ASID Mass Mailer, managed by Sean Burgess of Fig Said What, is now at version 1.11 as well. And lastly, OpenNTF will be at Lotusphere 2007 at Pedestal 324 in the Project Showcase. Make sure to stop by and see all of the latest open source applications for Notes and Domino. That's it for another round of OpenNTF updates. I'm John Rowland.
Greyhawk 68. Thanks again.
Very good as always.
Yeah, you know, he's got that voice that just, I don't know, he's
it just makes me melt.
Yes. So Mac Beta, Notes 7.02 for the Mac, came out in a managed beta last week. I have downloaded it. I am using it. It looks a lot better, believe me, a lot better than what the current 6X version of the Notes client look like. It's got same-time support. It acts more like an OS X application. And, you know, still some bugs here and there. Some things need to be tweaked.
Well, but that's why it's beta, right?
That's why it's beta, and that's why it's a managed beta. The new way Lotus seems to be handling betas. You know, no more of these open betas. And I think it's a good thing. You know, originally I said just – I was thinking, you know – get it out there. But then, you know, Ed Brill was posting somewhere about, you know, Hanover and how Hanover probably needs to, you know, they got one shot to get it right, right? So, yeah. And they probably need to really slowly, you know, start, you know, the beta process. So, we'll see. I have my hopes set high, and my expectations are very high, and I think yours are, and the community's are, so get it right, Lotus.
I have every confidence they will. You know, it is just such a big, it's such a big release not only from the fact that, like you said, everyone is expecting so much, but also just the fact that, that it is a completely overhauled client.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's even bigger than when we went from 4.6 to 5 or from 5 to 6. It's at least that was sort of new stuff on top of the old technology.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, they're going from Windows, which granted they're still going to be using, I guess, a lot of the Windows libraries and things like that and integrating that in with Eclipse. But, yeah, it's just... it's a whole new ball of wax.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a big piece of work.
Have you been following Mary Beth Raven's blog, Julian?
Yeah, I have. I haven't been good at, about commenting on it, but I apparently I don't need to because she's getting plenty of feedback already.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, you start looking at the UI. It's definitely, you can smell that it's notes, right?
But it smells like notes.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It looks great, you know, but you or I can make things look great too. I mean, we do all the time. We make our... no. But again, it's based on Eclipse. I personally haven't run any applications based on Eclipse, and I don't know many that are. You know, people want to see, you know, great cross-platform, you know, a great notes client that's cross-platform. You know, we haven't seen that in a while. So this is a huge, huge undertaking. So let's see.
Yes, it is. A
couple other things in 7.02, getting back to 7.02 here. From the developer standpoint, it looks like there's two new HTML-related field attributes that have been added. The first is a $$ HTML tag attributes field. When present in a form, it's placed when it's present in a form, its contents are placed in the attribute list of the HTML tag. So there you go. You can plop that bad boy in your form. And also, I know some people who were looking for custom doc type declarations. So there's a new field, and don't play with this one, Julian. But it's called
oh come on
$$ HTML front matter.
Mm-hmm.
So now on a form by form basis, you can change a doc type. So and that gets put, of course, before the HTML tag. So it says limitation: the special field is not recognized in custom response forms, and that's the same for that $$ HTML tag attributes field. So I don't know what a custom response form is. So if anyone knows what a custom response form is, let us know.
Yeah, well, and really, there are some people that are very, very particular about their how their HTML is formed and the doc types and the declarations and making sure all the tags are closed and things like that. So, you know, that small subset of people should be very happy with being able to have a little bit more control over the page that comes out of Domino.
Yeah.
I suppose with doc types. Now for someone like me, one of the neat new things, and I don't know what the specifics of these are yet, but apparently in the new CAPI toolkit for 7.02, there are some new HTML APIs and some new MIME APIs.
And some DXL stuff too.
And
but
some
not
DXL
in the
stuff.
CAPI, but
right. The DXL stuff is going to be in Domino, mm-hmm. but that'll be kind of interesting because it's always been really kind of very difficult to go as from a rich text standpoint. Of course, it's possible that this stuff has nothing to do with rich text, but I would think that it does.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see if this HTML and MIME API functionality is going to make it easier to pull HTML out of the rich text fields
mm-hmm.
that are not HTML already. And they might not, but I want to take a look. I need to see.
One thing we didn't talk about, Julian, was the Domino Web Access. Remind me not to drink caffeine on the night of podcast. All right.
DWA.
I'm slurring my words, and I'm probably okay.
You can say iNotes.
No, Domino DWA. Every time I think of DWA, or I say the word D or domino, I think of Carlos Mencia. D-D-D, right? You ever see him do that? No?
No.
Oh, forget it. All right, back to business. IBM Lotus Domino Web Access now works on the Mac via Firefox. And I know we've talked about that on prior versions of the podcast, but it's out. Then one thing that I blogged about on I don't know if I blogged on vow.net or on my blog, but the ability to import iCal-compliant calendars directly into the Lotus Notes calendar. And the way that this works is from your calendar, from either the Actions menu or from the one of the Action buttons under Tools, you can click on, I think it's Manage Import Calendars. And at that point, you can enter the location of a file that contains, you know, iCalendar entries, say from, you know, a sports team or a soccer club or something, and you can import those entries into your notes calendar. So, you know, you can have those events show up on your notes calendars. Now, it's not dynamic. So if the web, you know, it's not like an RSS feed. It's a one-time deal, and, you know, it works. I tested it. It works great. You can also take your notes calendar. You can either take your entire calendar from here to the end of time. Actually, it says all documents or selected documents. So if I put some, well, so you can say select, the month of October, and you may have 10 events or 10 calendar events. You select those, and you hit File, Export, and you click on, make sure you change the export type to iCalendar, .ICS files, and you can export your calendar to an ICS file and share it with someone whose other, you know, calendaring system can support the importation of iCalendar stuff. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And
I think that's probably a step in the direction of much wider iCal support, because a couple of people have kind of come along and said, well, it's great that it does this, but I wish it did this and this and this too. And I think it will. I think they're getting there. This is hopefully step one of several steps in terms of publishing. And as you mentioned before, iCal is, kind of calendar standards are not nearly as cut and dry as they would seem to be. Mm-hmm. And they're finally getting to that point. But, for several years, there was still a lot of interoperability issues with different calendaring programs and things like that. It's not something like RSS where, okay, there's and even within RSS, there's the RSS 0.9, RSS 1, RSS 2, and things like that. But it's, I think that's the direction they're going. And hopefully in later versions, we'll see even more neat new things to do with iCal and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, the implementation is in the core code for all of the iCalendar support. And I forgot to mention, too, that supposedly you can drag a URL like that contains like an ICS link or something, or a file into your inbox or onto your calendar, and it's supposed to fire off event that'll perform the import. Couple other things, Julian. The Lotus Notes Access for SAP Solutions feature is now included in 7.02. So if you open up 7.02 on the server and you do File Database Open, you'll see some stuff in there, some documentation on that. And I didn't see the templates, but I'm sure they're probably there. And another thing that came up is that all these new templates that we've talked about, like the blog template and the RSS feed generator, they all live on the server. A lot of people are installing the Note 7.02 client, and they're not finding the templates, so they're on the server. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Interesting.
Yeah, a couple other things here, because I'm on the caffeine, man.
You're on the caffeine. We're going long, though.
Lotus Domino server support for Novell SUSE Linux 10 on both 32 and 64-bit platforms. And they also say here, support for Microsoft Windows X64 server and format conversion for Microsoft Exchange Transport. Neutral encapsulation format, but you spoke about that. That sounds like an IBM thing, doesn't it? Transport neutral encapsulation format dead fish. Yeah. All right.
Well, and that's always been just a kind of a funny name anyway, because they call it transport neutral. And while the transport may be neutral, the format itself certainly has never been. And it's, I think the explanation was that the APIs have finally been opened up. Now, I don't know if the TNEF, and that's windmail.dat files, those things that get sent from Exchange sometimes, if that's only for Windows servers, because I know that that's something that runs on the server,
right,
and does all the translation in the background. I don't know if that only works on Windows servers or if it works on all the platforms.
That's a good question.
Because if they're talking about how Microsoft has now opened up these APIs, you think that to the APIs would require Windows to run. I don't know. I'll have to look that up.
I don't know. What else do we have on 702, Mr. Robichaux?
A few more things. The smart upgrade.
Yeah.
You can run as admin, so if you have lockdown desktops, you can now push out the smart upgrade to your lockdown desktop users, and apparently it works properly.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, DXL, you know, got updated. That's there's probably a few things we missed, but I think that, you know, what we'll do is we will have a link to one or two pages that outline some of the new things in 7.02 on the show notes, so that people will be able to see those, click on them, and go to them. And so if there's anything that we missed, then you will just have to read the pages yourself and see what cool new stuff is there.
Yeah, and a couple other just last little notes here before we hear a great tip on CGI variables from Mac Godera. The electronic software delivery is only available in English right now. Other languages are going to follow in the next couple of months. And the target delivery date for the Macintosh client is going to be in December 2006 for the English versions, and the Japanese, French, and German versions will surface in early 2007. So I think also the other languages, Danish, Swedish, Norwegian, Dutch, Finnish, Portuguese, Russian, Hebrew, Arabic, Hungarian, Greek, Turkish, Czech, Polish, and many of the others are going to be delivered in the first quarter of 2007. So that's about it. Man, too much caffeine.
I think that's a wrap, Bruce.
That's a wrap. Everyone, let's give it up for Mr. Mac Godera, and we thank you for tuning in to episode 34 of the Taking Notes podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next time.
Take care, gang.
Hey, this is Mac Godera of MacGodera.net. I'm here for your Taking Notes development tip. This week, we're covering CGI variables. The Domino web server uses common gateway interface variables to collect useful information from web clients, including the user session and browser details. To capture this information in a web application, a user has two options: create a field on a form or work with a document context object in a web agent. To access the data on a form, simply create a field that computes to itself. The name of the field should be the same as the variable name you are trying to capture. Have a look at the CGI variables available to you in the Domino Designer Help database under Table of CGI Variable Names. When the form is opened via a web browser, Domino will populate the field before passing the form to the user. Each CGI variable will need its own field on the form. You may find it useful to put a group of commonly used CGI variables used throughout your application into a subform. The ones I find myself most frequently using are PathInfoDecoded to get the URL context of the web page, QueryStringDecoded to access any parameters passed via URL, and HTTPRefer to get the reference of how the user reached the current page. To get to them, you'll need to access the document context object. From that point, you can access the variables as they are items on the document. Domino will populate them each time the agent is called via the web. To see an example of the code to do this, head over to my website, www.macgodera.net. Also, let us know if you have any suggestions for future tips, and thanks for tuning in.